All right, we're here with James Whitaker. We're at the Bellevue Brewing Company, having a beer, talking about the future.
I'm having a beer. You're struggling to keep up here a little bit.
I'm working.
Larry.
I want to be careful, because I go too fast, I'm not going to know what to ask.
Yeah, better men than you have had trouble keeping up with me.
That conversation could go sideways quick.
No one's going to feel bad about it.
So what do you do for Microsoft? Distinguished engineering dude that entails...
Apparently it's very distinguished. Yeah. So I'm one of the people that think about the future a lot.
Yeah.
And try to inspire other people to help develop it.
Yeah.
You know, what's life isn't worth living unless you're future leaning, I think.
So the future for a lot of people, it's a difficult thing to figure out.
And a lot of companies have got it wrong. You know, Blockbuster looked into the future and saw video rental as the thing, right?
We had an old industry that got the future wrong with an election recently.
Kodak, so. Right. What a day to talk about the future. So I don't think that's the case. I think the future is actually quite clear.
Yeah.
The future isn't going to be so different than the present that we're not going to recognize it. Mm-hmm. And that's what you need to recognize, that the future is a disruption of the present.
It's incremental?
It's going to have a lot of the present in it.
Yeah.
You know, think of the Tesla Model S.
Yeah.
Is that really a futuristic car? It looks like a Jaguar or an Audi or any other old rich guy's car, right?
Yeah. If you know how to drive a car, it's very familiar to you.
Yeah, you can get in, you can drive it, it's got a steering wheel, it's got tires, it's the same manufacturing processes, same metals. So that's the trick to predicting the future accurately, is understanding it's a disruption of the present.
Yeah.
It's going to look like the present plus plus.
Mm-hmm.
It always has. And so, you know, the way I like to predict the future is look at the past disruptions and see what we can learn from those. You know, when the PC took over the mainframe, what happened? What was involved in all that? And then the same thing happened to the PC when the web took over from it. And then the same thing happened to the web when mobile took over.
Yeah.
And then what's going to be next after to disrupt mobile?
And you talk about how it seems to be like a 10-year leap.
It doesn't seem to be. It is. And
this
is eerie, man. I mean, the mainframes had a good, solid 10-year innovative run. And then the PCs took over. And then the PCs had a good, solid 10-year run. And then the web took over. And think about the web, the timing of the web. Invented in 1989. And then by 1999, it was ready to take on the whole desktop ecosystem.
Yeah.
And it did, and it won. 10 years old. And then of course, the web was about 10 when mobile came in and disrupted it. All of a sudden, instead of going to a browser, we're going to the App Store in order to get our primary functionality. So we have this eerie trend of each of these eras lasting 10 years.
Yeah.
And this is why 2017 and 18 are so interesting, Larry, is because we're at the end of the 10-year run in mobile.
Yeah.
And so if you aren't looking, if you can code, you have got to be looking at the future excited as hell, because we're in one of these disruptive periods. According to every trend past, we're in one now.
Yeah.
What an exciting time
to be
a software developer.
It is, and to talk about the future. And you can tell, it's like even a consumer, you can feel like things are kind of slowing down. The whole mobile thing is kind
of...
The innovation isn't what it used to be.
And the iPhone 7 is the same as the 6. And
no
headphone jack. But the only reason you don't have your 5 is because it probably stopped working, right? The difference between those three products looks an awful lot like the difference between the web from 2005 to 2010. Nothing really happened. The difference between... You know, and then go back another 10 years to Microsoft Office, 95, 97, 2000. You're talking incremental, slowing innovation.
Yeah.
And this is when the world seems to get ready, right? Never bore a software developer, because we're going to do something new. We are going to jump ship immediately.
Yeah.
And so I think the whole software development community is just salivating for what's next.
Yeah.
We're tired of writing iPhone apps, putting them in the store, and having no one download them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? No one can find them. It's too clogged. No one can find you on the web. No one can find you in the App Store. And so the idea of what's next, who's going to develop it, how you're going to be part of it, thinking about the skills you need to develop for the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a coder and you're not thinking about the skills you're going to need in 2 to 5 years from now, we're not going to need you in 2 to 5 years from now. So this whole idea of the future is very personal. It's very much product oriented, and at the company level, everybody's got to be thinking about it.
Yeah.
No one wants to be Blockbuster.
So when you look at like what things might happen in the future, are you looking for where things slow? Are you looking for what things can be disrupted? Is it the disruptions that are the milestones?
So I see it a little bit differently. It's slowing. We can stop looking for the slowing.
Yeah.
You know, the difference between the iPhone 5, 6, and 7 is minimal, right? Not many people are buying watches. There's Apple's running out of places to stick a screen.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give them any ideas about where to stick the next screen, right? Yeah, seriously. There are certain places where screens just don't need to go. There's no question about that. We can just take that.
Yeah.
The question is how the industry is going to shift and what's it going to shift to. And there's two kind of insights that I just keep popping out to me. When PCs took over mainframes, they were about 10 years old, right? The web was about 10 years old. So whatever is next is already 10 years old.
Yeah.
No one, you don't have to invent anything new. Stop trying to invent the next new thing. Whatever is going to be the core of this next decade,
yeah,
has already been invented. And in fact, it's already 10 years old.
Yeah.
So if you want to look at it, find out what the future is, you find out what was invented about 10 years ago. What are all the things that you know are about 10 years old?
Yeah. I interviewed Bill Gates at CES. It was, I think, 10 years ago. And when I talked to him, he was talking about how he thinks in the future, you need another.
I need another.
He thought in the future, when, woohoo, we'll get her over here, take your order. So in the future, he said, just assume screens will be everywhere. And at the time I thought, and he was like, assume screens are everywhere and they're very low cost. And at the time I thought, oh yeah,
but
right.
You know, that was.
But now, with augmented reality, it kind of
screens really are everywhere.
Like that.
Yeah, the sky is a screen, that table is a screen, you can put a screen anywhere you want.
Yeah.
I don't know though, if he was actually thinking about, you know, literally screens being everywhere.
Yeah,
You know, this being a physical screen.
I think about that sometimes, if he meant augmented reality, but just didn't say. But.
Yeah, well, I suppose we can give him credit for it.
Yeah.
So what's 10 years old? And virtual reality is about 10 years old,
yeah.
Right? It was in its very formative stages 10 years ago. So that's one of those things. It's about 10 years old that we really need to begin thinking about how all these scenarios that we are coding now on a screen would be coded in the virtual world.
Yeah.
That's something that people need to really be thinking about.
Yeah. What is the problem that's most in need of a solution today?
Well, so for me, thank you, trade you. Look at that.
How did she know what to give you?
This is my second beer in my progression. That's how she knew. All right, so that's
not the same beer you had before.
That's not the same beer I had before. This is the Tangerine Pale Ale. I had the 425 before. So I have a progression of beers and a ESB before that. So she understands that. In fact, that's 10 years. This, what you just experienced right here is Invisible UI,
yeah,
which is also about 10 years old. How did she know what beer I wanted? Because she has personal data about my beer drinking habits that she stores and uses. She knows I come in here, I'm a regular. She knows my first beer is going to be malty and sweet. She knows my second beer is going to amp the hops a little bit. And she knows my third, and next time she'll bring me an IPA. Right?
Yeah.
That's my progression. And so that's Invisible UI, just like talking to Cortana or Siri or the Amazon Echo.
Yeah.
It's Invisible UI, and it's more evidence that this screen is probably an endangered species. I don't need to express my intent to my infrastructure. My intent is just there. She knew my intent the minute I walked into the door. I didn't have to express it. And we didn't have to have a conversation, which is what you're having through your screen. Oh, what about this? What about left swipe, right swipe?
Yeah.
None of that has to happen.
But
so invisible,
that was done with wetware, but the future is probably big data. So we could all benefit from
the
that.
The cloud, as happenstance would have it, is about 10 years old, right?
Yeah.
Amazon. We thought they were building a bookstore.
Yeah, yeah.
They weren't building a bookstore. They were building cloud and e-commerce infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And you really can't understate how fundamental that is to the future.
Yeah.
So 2006 or so, Amazon Web Services came out. And what it did was kill the web. I don't think people give the cloud credit for this.
Yeah.
We think about the cloud as, oh, it's just a bunch of machines. It's just a bunch of servers. It's more than that.
Yeah.
Before the cloud, we had web servers distributed all over the world.
Yeah, some of us had them in our houses or in our closets or at work.
Do you have any more anymore?
Not now, no.
No one does. Yeah. I mean, people can still do it, theoretically.
Yeah.
Nobody does. But let's just bask in the...
And it's weird because I would have killed for the bandwidth that I have now back then to run a server.
Of course you would.
And now I have the ability to do it, and I'm like, ugh, why would I even bother?
Why would you even bother? It's in the cloud, but the thing about the cloud is it's aggregated all this data.
Yeah.
It used to be scattered all over the world, and there was no way to pick this piece of data out of this web server and this piece of data out of this web server and say, hey, look, with both of these pieces of data, we can make the following inference.
Yeah.
We couldn't do that because they were all siloed. Now that all that data is in the cloud, we can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really the fundamental thing that's going to happen in the future. Data is going to eat the world. There's this whole software is eating the world thing that we talked about 10 to 20 years ago. It's data that is literally defining the world right now.
Yeah.
And the biggest proof point is self-driving cars. The entire driving process, the landscape, the roads, the maps, the one-way streets, the obstacles in the road, the speed limits, all of this has been reduced to nothing but data.
Yeah.
And that's why the cars
are so good. An incredible amount
of
data.
An incredible amount of data. Look at, you know, Google, I guess, were the people that were doing self-driving cars, or at least they got in the news for doing self-driving cars.
Yeah.
And they weren't making any progress until all the data got in the same place.
Yeah.
And now Ford's doing it, GM's doing it, Tesla's doing it, everybody's doing it. It turns out it's an easy problem once all that data gets aggregated.
Yeah.
So self-driving cars are a good kind of penultimate example of this new era.
Mm-hmm.
Massive scale data that machines process at speed and make decisions that humans can't even really be in the loop for.
Yeah.
There's no way. I can't put a year on this. 10, 15 years, I don't know. There will be laws passed to keep humans out of cars because we're going to be so bad at it.
Yeah.
You know, we already are.
It'll be a liability.
But we're better than anything else. But once driving has been reduced to data, mm-hmm. the machines are going to be better at it than anything else.
Yeah.
And where the humans fit in into that.
Probably start with insurance becoming more expensive because you become the liability compared to everyone else.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Then it becomes something that's just not financially
feasible.
And
there's also economics involved, too. You know, it costs a lot to buy a car. It costs a lot to insure a car. It costs a lot to fuel a car. It costs a lot to maintain a car. All that's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And the cars are going to be really good. They're going to realize, hey, you know, James is going to a concert at the Crocodile in downtown Seattle.
Yeah.
He's got six people in his house. They're probably all going with him. They've all got tickets. I need to get a car to his house at this time to get him there that holds six people or whatever.
Yeah.
All this stuff is the machines are going to be making all these decisions.
Yeah.
Humans won't have to think about it.
And when your car drops you off at work, it goes out and becomes your Uber for you while you're
else.
At work.
Yeah.
And
or will it be your car? These are the decisions that we have to
true.
Make.
Will it be your car? Will you lease
maybe
it?
Maybe the city will own them. Maybe a company like Uber will dominate that whole thing. Why would you actually have to own a car?
Yeah.
You know, the Internet of Things really amps up this whole shared economy. Like last summer, I put my hot tub on the Internet of Things. You know, it can open and close its own lid.
Mm-hmm.
It can check its own chemicals. It does all this stuff. By the way, everybody should do that. Pick a machine and just put it on the Internet of Things just to try to figure it out, right? Make yourself choose between Raspberry Pi and Arduino processors and all these things. And a great way to learn is just to solve a problem. And so it's mostly on the Internet of Things now. I've moved, and so I'm recoding. This is my second hot tub I'm putting on the Internet of Things now. Why couldn't I share that out?
Mm-hmm.
It's completely self-maintaining. And so you could come by, and my hot tub could say, hey, you know, you want to sit in me for an hour, it'll cost you this much. And, you know, we share our homes with Airbnb. We share our cars with Uber. Why not share our hot tubs?
You know my temperature. Adjust for me when I get there.
And I'll know if, you know, if you pee in my pool, it's going to know it, and it's going to left swipe your ass, and you will never, ever be able to get in. It's going to send out an APB. Don't let Larry
hopefully
in your
hopefully, it'll drain
tub,
it and
man.
Fill it back up for you,
don't
too.
Don't let Larry in your hot tub.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not after a couple beers. So, you got
well,
your beer.
Well, you're still working on this, man.
Do you want
a nipple for that thing?
No, I'm going to slam that thing as soon as we're done here. So, you got your beer as I was asking this, but what's the problem that most needs a solution today?
So, what's going on around you? There's two issues to this. There are forces at bay that are preventing these problems from being solved.
Yeah.
And then there are the problem itself. So we'll talk about this in a minute. The problem, I think, is directly connecting me to the things that I want.
Yeah.
So, like, how many, I've got a lot of fans in this area. If they knew I was here, a lot of people would probably show up just to watch his show, have a beer.
Yeah.
Hey, this is kind of cool. They don't know this is happening. You don't know what's going on around you.
Yeah.
You know, I flew into Tucson, Arizona last week. I gave a keynote at their hackathon. And I arrived in Tucson, and it was up to me. Where are the breweries?
Yeah.
You know, where's the live music venues? The two
things
that I like
you probably do
most.
Every time you land.
I know. Why do I have to do that?
Yeah.
Why isn't it that I have to do that because of that other thing?
Mm-hmm.
The middleman. Oh, I don't know. Let's call them Google.
Yeah.
Right? They're preventing all that. Yeah. They don't make money by saying, oh, James is in Tucson. Holy alert the breweries. They're going to want to know about this guy.
Yeah.
They make money by advertising. And so anybody want a piece of James? Who wants a piece of James? They don't care whether I'm happy. They don't care whether the companies are happy. They make their money no matter what. So I think the biggest problem is directly connecting me to the things that will make my life better.
Yeah.
Every time I land in a new city, it ought to be like, okay, alert the breweries.
Let them know James is in town.
They might want to say, hey, James, we've got this, you know, thing going on, or here's a coupon, or you know, you come in here and write a blog post and we get with this, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's frustrating that, you know, I'm two blocks from a brewery that I'm trying to, where the hell is this brewery?
Yeah.
And the brewery doesn't know I'm looking for them.
Mm-hmm.
Only Google knows I'm looking for them, or Apple, or even Microsoft, even you know, the mapping company. They don't have a stake in me finding that brewery.
Mm-hmm.
The brewery has a stake in me finding them. I think the future is going to be without these middlemen.
Yeah.
Where if I'm searching for a brewery, the brewery is alerted to that fact, and their bot, their agent, whatever it happens to be, can help me get there and, you know, and have a good experience.
And for the people,
so I think you're going to see that more and more in the future. You're going to see companies like Twitter wake up and understand we've got buyers and sellers
mm-hmm.
within our own closed ecosystem. We have people tweeting their intent
yeah.
to buy this product or attend this show.
Yeah.
And within the same ecosystem, we have those shows
yeah.
and people
yeah.
selling those products. And yeah. what do? We put an ad in the middle of them that generally doesn't make sense. This
yeah.
whole ads economy is going to go away, and the world is going to love it, right? Seriously, my son's a musician, and I bought loudspeakers from
yeah.
a musician's friend. Dude, I hook you up with it with some good live music. Come over to my house, listen to my son's band jam out one night.
Yeah.
They're amazing. But I bought them 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And I'm still getting ads for loudspeakers that musician's friend is paying for.
No, it's wasted money.
Musician's friend, if they knew about this, they'd be pissed.
Yeah.
They know I bought the speakers.
Yeah.
But they don't have control over it. Google does.
They know you're interested in the speakers. So, they know you bought the speakers.
Google
but they can't
keeps taking their
sell.
Money for ads, knowing yeah. that I bought the product. And the coup de grace of this is that they are one of those Google trusted stores.
Yeah.
So Google could tell them if they wanted to.
Yeah.
And they don't. So I think this next future of the Internet of Things and big data, we're going to know enough to connect people directly.
Right? Yeah.
Twitter has to wake up and realize ads aren't working, but we have buyers and sellers. We have intent occurring in our ecosystem, and intent being resolved within our ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need Google. They don't need search engines. They don't need ads. They have a community.
Yeah.
And so I think it's going to be much more personal and like this beer, getting this beer for, you're making me speak too much. I don't get a chance to drink.
All right.
By the way, this is beautiful. You should have this for your
I will.
So you're drinking a Pilsner?
I'll follow yours, yeah.
Okay, so this is a good one for the next progression, because what you do is you take the hops up from like the high 20s to the low 40s. Your tongue will thank you for it.
Okay.
So have this WTA
awesome.
Pale next. Wow.
So what's the most disruptive thing that you see on our horizon right now?
That. Right, the end of the ads economy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way we work, and we didn't have to. What if Google would have gone a different direction at the beginning of the 2000s, and instead of saying, okay, everything's free, and we're gonna get advertisers to pay for it.
Yeah.
Because you gotta admit, when the web first started, it was kinda cool.
Mm-hmm.
It sounded like utopia. everything's free, information is free, but it's not. Just ask Wikipedia, where most of us go for our information. Wikipedia has to beg for money in this ads economy, and it shouldn't be like that.
Yeah.
What if every time Wikipedia served a result, we were able to say, that's the result I needed, right swipe, and Wikipedia got a micropayment or something like that. We could have implemented that model way back when, which would have meant the people who provided the most value would have bubbled to the top of a Google or a Bing or whatever search. But that's not the world we got.
Yeah.
The world we got was, you want to bubble up to the top of a Google search? Pay up.
Yeah.
Right? Your relevance doesn't matter. Your ability to innovate doesn't matter. You know, if you want, I just bought a mattress, and I was searching for, you know, the actual brand of the mattress. And Casper came up first.
Yeah, I know. That's all I see now.
I
search mattresses one night, and all I see are Casper ads
because
now.
They paid the most for that placement. You could even put another mattress company's brand in it, and you still get Casper first.
Yeah.
That's called brand hijacking.
Yeah.
Why are we tolerating this? Yeah. This is stunning.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, Casper, you're spending more on me for ads than I'm going to spend on your mattress, so.
I actually won't buy their mattress. They may be the best mattresses in the world. I will never buy them because the whole process just bothers me a lot. So what if it was actually the ability? We have that.
Mm-hmm.
Tinder. Say what you want about Tinder. By the way, it's not a hookup app, at least for the young people.
I've been married, so I don't know.
It doesn't matter. My kids both use Tinder, and for the young people, it's not a hookup app. But I think Tinder, within Tinder, there are some hints about the future.
Yeah.
Right. What if you had the intent? So right now, Tinder has the intent. By the way, think about intents. I want all of you all to go throughout your day thinking of all the intents you have and all the data that would take to resolve those intents. You're going to come up with some technology that you can build companies on. But what if your intent was, so you just said you're married?
Yeah, yeah.
How many times has your wife asked you, honey, what do you want to do tonight?
Too many.
It's an annoying question,
times,
right?
Yeah.
So what if you had a Tinder-like app that said, what do you want to do tonight?
Yeah.
And you could say, and it knows you.
Knows everything you. About you. Probably knows me better than my wife.
It knows you like you like sushi. It knows that you like jazz music. Ugh.
Yeah.
Right? All these things. And so then it's going to say, all right, what about this? And then you can left swipe and right swipe your way through a date night.
Yeah.
And that's what apps like Tinder do. They directly connect buyer and seller. That's probably the wrong words. I would probably choose new words if I had to say that again. But they directly connect people.
Yeah.
I think technologies like that are going to overtake the middlemen of Google and the App Store that allow people that want something and who have something to provide to direct connect.
And
that's going to be the future.
Your intent might just be that I want to have a conversation about the future and go to dinner and not be by myself.
Yeah.
But how would you do that? And Tinder's definitely not the way
it's the interface that you could use, right?
Yeah.
The idea of left swiping and right swiping, voting up and voting down, you actually get people's real opinion instead of all of this crap that you get through Google and Yelp and the ability to lie, because you can't really lie. If you right swipe and you have to be there, you know, you can use location. You can actually get a real view of whether or not somebody had a great meal or a great experience, and now you know. You can't make stuff up. But unfortunately, you know, 20 years ago, Google made the decision that the advertisers are going to be in control. And not really, the advertisers aren't in control. Google's in control. The information we see is the stuff that Google can make the most money on. Right?
Yeah.
Because they got private islands to finance and yachts to
float.
Get in your browser, click those f***ing links, man. Seriously, click those f***ing links. These millionaires and billionaires need that money.
Those yachts do not have good gas mileage.
They don't float themselves. So, those pilots cost a lot of money.
All right, so I've fed a database with every single thing about me. I mean, more information than anyone in the world has about me. Are we just giving up on privacy, or what do we need to think about that, or is it a database that I allow certain people to connect to, or?
I hate to keep bashing on Google, maybe, but
when you're again, a big dog, that's where the target goes.
They've given privacy a bad name.
Yeah.
So here's the privacy equation. Santa Claus. He knows everything, right?
Yeah.
But you know what he knows. You write him a letter.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Santa, look, all this shit. and you sing the contract with Santa. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake.
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, I'm good with that. Because you're going to get back. You understand the value proposition from Santa. You're going to get back toys.
Yeah.
Worst case, a lump of coal. And you're good. And so that privacy exchange information, it was worth it with Santa. Mm-hmm. Is it worth it with Google? Google knows a lot about you.
Yeah.
When was the last time you saw an ad and you thought, thank you, Google?
Yeah.
That's exactly what I wanted.
Yeah, never.
When did that happen?
Never. I see a lot of stuff I've bought already and a lot of stuff that I wonder why in the world is this ad coming
up? Because Google isn't incented to get you what you want. Google is incented to make money from advertisers. And that's why that was such a fatefully bad decision that they made back in the seminal days of their company.
Yeah.
To give everything away for free. They are beholden to make money.
It was good to get that first yacht, but...
Maybe the first yacht was good. And so I view privacy as that Santa Claus equation. How can we value that? And unfortunately, Google has stacked the deck against technology companies because consumers have been used to giving, here, know all this stuff about me, and they're not getting anything back. Mm-hmm. And so it's up to, the next generation of companies that replace Google to do something about that.
Yeah.
That's the challenge for the Microsofts and every other company that wants to beat Google is how do we make that exchange worth it.
Yeah.
I give you this, I get this back, I like that.
Yeah.
Like this beer. She knows about my drinking habits. I get this in return.
Yeah.
I get a beer before anybody else. All I have to do is walk. Yes.
It's worth it.
It's worth it. And so that's a value proposition.
Yeah.
And I think I would rather give Starbucks or Pike's Place Market or Bellevue Brewing Company my private data because I'm going to get something back than I would Google, who just makes that decision for me.
Yeah.
So I think the future, because it's directly connected, the privacy is going to go away. Yes. Mm-hmm. We are going to feel a lot more comfortable about it because we can judge each of those with, here's what you know about me, here's what I get in return, and if it's not worth it, we can just cancel it out and go somewhere else.
Yeah.
We can't do that now.
So in one of your talks I watched recently, you were talking about the app that you use in a movie where, it tells you when to go pee.
I love the Run Pee guys. I'm sure they love me.
Yeah.
So it's actually a husband and wife team that writes this app. And I think one of their moms goes to movies and helps them with the data. But I use that example because, the story is I'm at the movies with my date. My date walks out. I don't know why. Brad Pitt's in this movie. He's going to take his shirt off. And
can't
I'm
miss not, that.
She's going to miss it. She didn't miss anything because she's got this app called Run Pee. It tells her when to pee at the movies.
Yeah.
And so what I do in that is I ask everybody, okay, who's got this app? Or who goes to movies? Everybody raise their hand.
Yeah.
Who's got the app? Nobody has the app.
Yeah.
And so it's my, my demonstration of the fact that there's all this technology out there to help us.
Yeah.
But we don't even know it exists. Mm-hmm. We don't know it exists because there's either Google or an app store in between us and the information that we need. That's why I think the future, we've got to so short circuit that.
Yeah.
We've got to be directly connected. What if the movie theater knew those times? What if we could have a direct relationship with the movie theater so that the movie theater could say, hey, this is the you got a 2-minute window here, you got a 4-minute window here. And then so the question is, how do developers get paid? And by the way, this is important because all those apps like that RunPee and all these other examples I give, no one's making any money from that. All these apps, we're writing all this freaking code, we're putting it up in the app store, and nobody's downloading our shit because they can't find it.
Yeah.
There's too many apps in the app store.
Yeah.
But when our machines are saying, okay, wait a minute, James hasn't been geolocated in a toilet for 3 hours.
Yeah.
James's mean time to bladder evacuation, 3 hours. James had a beer when he went in. James is at the iPick movie theater in Redmond. James is in theater number 4 because we geolocated him and figured that out. We looked up on the web to see what movie is playing and when it started. Now we know, okay, James can pee, and in 5 minutes, he's got a pee window.
Yeah.
It's all data.
Yeah.
We don't need a screen. We don't really even need an app. We just need those pee times. And with my computing infrastructure managing that, I get like a little subliminal, a little message, I don't know, earbuds, whatever, bone phone, whatever it happens to be. Let's call her, Cortana.
Yeah.
Just wakes up and says, hey, James, I know you got to go.
Yeah.
And you can go now. Mm-hmm. And then you go off and you pee. And then when you come back, people who wrote Runpee get a micropayment because that's third-party data that just got consumed. And so that's my vision of the future. Mm-hmm. It's the machines being so aware of us that they capture our intent the moment that occurs in digital form.
Yeah.
They also understand other people, because of big data, who've had that same intent, and they know how they resolved it.
Yeah.
They also understand us personally and can use our personal preferences in there to say, okay, this is the time that, that you need to go pee or whatever you need to do. And it all happens seamlessly with no advertisements involved. Can you imagine Google recommending pee times? Yeah. Like, okay, I know when you can go, but you're going to have to watch this advertisement.
Yeah.
For, I don't know, Pepsi Cola.
Yeah, watch me pour this iced
with
tea.
With waterfall sounds in the background before I'm going to tell you. Ads have no place in the future.
And even at the theater, I mean, I've got a cup holder and I go to the theater where they come serve you. If they could just put a weight sensor in there so they know when my drink is empty and bring me another one, I'd be happy.
But see, that's so easy in the future because those sensors are going to, they're getting cheaper.
Yeah.
So this brings us to Moore's Law, right? Moore's Law has been famous for reducing the size of our computers and increasing their capacity.
Yeah.
We're to the point now, if you take away the screen, you take away most of the battery, and you're left with electronics that are actually quite small.
Yeah.
These sensors are going to be everywhere in the future.
Yeah.
And in fact, self-driving cars, we talked about that. We can self-drive cars now without even any sensors in the road. Mm-hmm. Imagine how reliable they'll get when there are sensors in the road and in the parking lots and cameras that will help them. We don't even have that yet, and they're still self-driving and having accidents at such a low rate that it's just crazy.
Well, and
these sensors are cheap, and they will know. They're going to know everything.
They're going through anyway, and they're putting these reflectors down in the middle of the road when they pave a road. So you may as well put an RFID in there so when it snows, you know where the road is. So it just seems like common sense. So for the GoPee app, let's say everybody had it, right? And then it gets to that point and 50 people stand up.
Everybody's peeing at the same time.
It seems like another solution
So this is why, a middleman like Google or Apple or Microsoft could never solve that problem.
Yeah.
That's why I think it's really important for the movie theaters to have that data and to manage that process. Because they're the ones with the movie. They're the ones with the bathroom. Let them figure that out, right? Let them say, okay, here's the first wave of maybe there's, I don't know how the movie theater should implement it, but maybe there's a way to say, okay, I'd like to be part of the first pee time, and then you get a little alert.
Weight
or
sensor,
whatever.
This person drank a lot more,
they'll
so they're going first.
They'll figure it out. Yeah. They'll figure it out.
So let's say you just graduated college today and you were going to start your own company. What kind of things would you be thinking about?
So here's what I want everybody to do. I want you to go through your day thinking about data. Because right now, you're making decisions. Every time you search, say, well, why did I have to search?
Yeah.
Why did I need a screen to do that? How would I do that with no screens, right? Mm-hmm. What sensors would I need? What data would I need from the cloud? How would I get it? And how would I take all that sensor input and all that data and come up with a solution?
Yeah.
So here's what I want you to do. If you're graduating college now, I want you to stop thinking about websites, and I want you to stop thinking about apps, and I want you to stop thinking about screens. How do you capture intent in digital form the moment it occurs? How do I know that person has to pee in the movie? Well, last time I geolocated them, their mean time to bladder evacuation, all these things. It's all data.
Yeah.
Take these problems and seriously reduce them to data. Once you reduce them to data, you can build a machine that will resolve that intent.
Mm-hmm.
And so think about it, go through life. Why is it that I haven't been offered another beer? Okay, how do I reduce that to data?
Yeah.
Right. And you'll come up with the next billion-dollar idea.
All right, so let's talk about singularity. Is it a buzzword, a mile marker?
God, the singularity.
Is it dangerous? Is it something we should fear? Is it something we should embrace? How will we even know when we get there? Mathematically, you know you have a singularity because everything breaks down, but how do we even know when we're getting close or we're there?
What a conversation.
So what does it even mean?
The fact that we're having this conversation is kind of cool. Because 5 years ago, we didn't really talk about this. We say artificial intelligence, and we kind of laugh.
Yeah.
I mean, we were computer science majors. I wrote AI algorithms, right? AO star and Z and all this. there's nothing smart about the algorithm.
Yeah.
The algorithms are not intelligent. The algorithms are processing data. You code an AI algorithm like you code anything else. We give the algorithms way too much credit.
Yeah.
The reason that it looks more intelligent now, and it does, right? Yeah. You ask Cortana the weather, and she tells you, how'd you know the weather?
Is intelligence even the right word?
It's not, right? It's data. The data is really what's giving the algorithm so much. And it's that, you know, aggregation of all those web servers in the same place where the algorithms can go through and find patterns. That's why we know all these answers.
Yeah.
When this happens, this answer seems to, so to give that answer every time this happens, and it looks really smart. It's not smart. It's algorithmically impressive. That's what AI should stand for, algorithmically impressive.
Yeah.
It's the data where the answers lie, and the algorithms are just really fast at surfacing all this. None of them are intelligent.
Yeah.
There's not been a single intelligent algorithm ever written. You can play chess because it's an algorithm. It's the creation of the game of chess.
Yeah.
That's where the creativity, when an algorithm creates a game that the whole world becomes addicted to, that is a bit of creativity involved in that. When an algorithm designs a shirt that the whole world will want, there's a little bit of creativity involved in that.
Yeah.
Although it's probably still algorithmic. It's creativity that's the difference. It's being able to look at A and B, and instead of getting C, look at A and B and say, no, it's not B, it's B prime.
And there's been some experiments.
Algorithms can't do that.
There's been some things so far where machines have written original music or done an original painting.
And it's
but nothing,
terrible.
It's almost like it's based on pattern matching. It's like.
And of course it's based on pattern matching. Look, no computer has ever done anything more than it was programmed for.
Yeah.
No computer ever said, fuck that line of code. I'm going to execute this other line of code just because I want to.
Here's an original thought.
No one's ever done that. No computer has ever done anything except what it's programmed for. And when you program it for a wide variation to pick a bunch of stuff randomly or by some algorithm, it's going to look like it's intelligently designed, but it's not.
So let me
ask code.
You, is that
even
possible?
So once a computer
possible?
Wakes up and says, fuck you, I'm writing my own code.
Yeah.
That is intelligence.
Is it even ever possible to write something for a machine for it to have an original thought?
There's only one correct answer to that, and it's got to be I don't know.
Yeah.
Because there are variables I can't see. Mm-hmm. Maybe, right? How did we become conscious? We're the only ones that we really think are conscious, right? Dogs have some, but we became conscious. Oh, actually, there were a bunch of other, we killed them all, right? So there clearly can only be one kind of conscious thing, right? We killed all the hobbits, we killed all the Neanderthals, killed all the Cro-Magnons. And in that case, Westworld kind of has it right. You know, the first virtual world we're going to create, we're either going to fuck them or we're going to kill them.
Or both,
in whatever order. So I don't know. A computer may wake up and realize its own existence, and then the world gets kind of scary.
Yeah.
Right. What's it going to do? So let's think about
scary,
what we do.
Scary, or does it end up serving you? And then you're like, oh, this is awesome.
Maybe. So what? The only example we have are humans.
Yeah.
Humans are conscious.
And it's horrible to base it on.
And so it's not good. So one thing that humans do is kill all the other conscious beings. And so if a human wakes up and says, hey, I'm conscious, so are you, I'm going to kill you, that's kind of a problem.
Yeah.
And maybe we ought to take Wikipedia offline just so they don't see the whole, you know, history of douchosity.
That'll buy you 10 seconds.
Yeah. And, or they worship us, right? Because that's the other thing we do. We worship our creator.
Yeah.
And so our tendency to kill competing conscious beings or worship our creator is really the only two patterns that we have.
Yeah.
And neither one of them are particularly good, I think.
If it were able to find its own purpose.
Oh man, I need another beer for that.
All right.
So let's. Hey, look, I got him drinking. Everybody, look at it. The interview's not over, and Larry's drinking. Well done, sir. So the question is, let's say they do, and I can't describe the mechanism by which a machine becomes conscious, but I also don't understand how we did either. So there is some possibility, perhaps. Let's say they do. then what? To me, we have two choices. If, because the machines are going to be better at everything, there's got to be some way that we maintain our dominance.
Yeah.
What is that going to be? We have to be more creative than them, which perhaps means we need to start teaching less STEM and more art and more of the things that computer, because STEM, computers are going to be great at STEM.
Yeah, you're not going to beat the computer at
STEM. You're not going to beat the computer at STEM, but you could beat the computer at art.
Yeah.
And so we need to get so good at the things that the computers aren't good at. Mm-hmm. That's one possibility. Or we need to just join them. Beat them or join them, right? And joining them means we become computers ourselves.
Yeah.
By recognizing that our physical body is a machine.
Yeah.
And it can be augmented and it can be programmed. And our DNA and our brains are data. Mm-hmm. We've already reduced our DNA to data. Right? The Human Genome Project did that in 13 years with basically technology no more powerful than this Windows phone.
Yeah.
We are now mapping the brain with that same veracity with a lot, you know, more powerful supercomputers.
Yeah, and I remember when I was a kid, I mean, back...
you did?
I'm old, I was in the 70s, 80s.
Man, it was a blur.
They were talking about DNA back then, and they would show like a row of file cabinets that went off into infinity and say, this is how much data is in DNA, and we'll probably never be able to decode it in our entire lifetimes. And here I am, you know, a couple decades later, and it's already done.
Yeah.
And now we're working on the next big problem. So it'll probably happen faster than we think, and that's back to Moore's Law.
Yeah, it's going to happen faster than we think. And when we begin to reduce the human brain to data, some serious magic is going to happen, right? We're going to understand where depression and anxiety and bipolar and schizophrenia, and we're going to cure that. And we're going to cure it with little machines in the right parts of our brain that squirt dopamine or serotonin or whatever it happens to be that stops that panic attack before it happens.
Yeah.
We're going to be able to download information. There's no studying. I want to know neuroscience. Bam. Yeah. I want to know astrophysics. Bam. And it's just going to happen. It's going to be
crazy. And constant connection to the internet and random access to any information.
Yeah, that's right.
So, yeah, constant internet connection, random access to data at any time through your mind. That's awesome for Wikipedia.
Can you imagine
YouTube comments? So. I don't want that.
Oh, wow. Let's talk about the kids first. The kids are going to love this, right? No more sitting through boring lectures to learn. It's just instant, right? Everybody's got Google implanted in their brain.
Yeah.
Without the ads. It could be a pretty cool process. I mean, just imagine what we are going to be capable of. So we were talking about, you know, the machines, beat them or join them. If we join them and we use the power of the machines connected to our own brains, because, I mean, we are a machine.
Yeah.
And once the Human Brain Project reduces our brain function to data, we are going to be able to learn at a rapid rate. We are going to be able to make connections. That's, I think, where we're going to ultimately beat the machines. But there's scary stuff in that, too. I mean, think about how technology gets disseminated. Who gets it first?
The rich people.
The people who can afford it, right? What happens when, you know, I'm buying, you're richer than me, so I got to buy your implant, you know, after you get the new upgrade.
Yeah, you got to keep up with me. I'm going to stack rank ahead of you if you don't.
But do we not then have a world where there are two different species of humans?
Leapfrogging over each other with each incremental upgrade.
There's a little second of sadness I have when a beer is gone.
I bet it will be temporary.
Do you not do that? Just a little bit of, you were such a good friend.
I can always find a way to gain happiness again.
But if you let it settle enough, this is a trick to beer drink. If you let it settle enough, there's always, see what settled, and then you get that last little.
One more.
Like one little goodbye kiss from a cherished lover. But now we have two species.
Yeah.
Now what? We have never coexisted with another species of conscious beings. Never. Mm-hmm. It could be that World War III isn't fought between nations. It's fought between the augmented and the purely human.
Yeah.
And what do we do with that? Let them eat cake?
Yeah.
And what about the people who refuse? There will always be those. Mm-hmm. Lots of decisions to make.
Fortunately,
yeah, we need another beer. Just wait, I got a feeling. You never know.
Yeah.
It could be. Here's my hope. It's not just you know, the clothes manufacturers and the truck drivers and the manufacturing people that are going to lose their jobs.
Yeah.
It's also going to be the lawyers and the politicians. Blockchaining. Blockchain technology should take out the whole field of law mm-hmm. and the whole field of politics.
Yeah.
So imagine the President of the United States on this inauguration day being a machine, passing laws based on, you know, they're fair, they're unbiased.
Thank you.
Look at this. It's like magic.
What's this one now?
Would you like me to describe the next beer in the progression?
Yes, tell me what it is.
Feel it, smell the hoppy aroma.
Very right. hoppy.
So this is an India Pale Ale. This nice. This particular brewery has a particularly good one. And so now we've gone from the hops right to the high 20s to the low 40s. This one's in the low 60s or so. I don't go much over that. And so this one will be my own until, if the only way I will go down in hops is if I eat.
Yeah.
Because if I eat, it kind of clears my palate out. And then I usually start with stouts and porters and
yeah.
and the more rich stuff.
Yeah.
The stuff worthy to be called dessert.
Yeah.
So you get, you know, augmented and not augmented. I mean, this is a recipe for World War III. When it's going to be a dangerous thing too, because the augmented are going to have a huge advantage
yeah.
over the unaugmented. We're going to have all the answers in our head. We're going to be super learners. We're going to be superheroes.
Yeah,
we've got to manage this right, and the only hope is having machines manage it, because machines aren't sexist. Machines aren't racist. Machines are unbiased and they're fair. And fortunately, blockchaining technology has come at just the right time. We can yeah. replace all the lawyers and politicians with machines, and I think we'll all be better off.
And it seems like that's going to be a time of specialization, because the way you adapt yourself is probably going to define what you do. So if I have machines that adapt my physical form, like my muscles, and I move faster, I'm going to do something that requires movement, but I might augment myself where I think faster or things like that. It's
well, I mean, super health is most certainly going to be so this is what I'm studying now. I had this little project in neuroscience. Neuroscience was last year. Do you all do this? Do you, like, every year pick a subject to just kind of just nail, right? And so neuroscience was my last year's goal, and it culminated in me writing a paper about how to cure stage fright. Yeah. I learned enough neuroscience to solve one problem. And that's what I'm not a neuroscientist. I'm not an expert. Learn enough about a subject to solve one good problem. So I solved the stage fright problem using what I learned about neuroscience over a year. And so this year it's kind of anatomy and health. Maybe it's because I'm getting older. Mm-hmm. But it seems really solvable. You know, after exercise, there's certain parts of the body that are going to need little squirts of certain, you know, chemicals. And, you know, if you get to a certain age and you know, chemicals like DHEA need to be injected into the system. Aging, I don't know if aging is completely solvable, but it's most certainly something that we can stretch out a great deal.
Yeah.
If we have machines placed in our body that know about, you know, cell growth and healthy cells. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're going to cure cancer before we figure out how to absolutely prevent it. By having machines in our body that at the sign of the very first cancer cell, attack it. Mm-hmm. Maybe we don't need to cure it.
So
maybe we can prevent it.
There's people now, like, you know, Google Ray Kurzweil, talking about you can live forever. They're going to put your consciousness in a machine. And it almost gets back to like Star Trek, where every time they teleported somewhere, I thought, you just died. There's another you going on somewhere, but you're dead now. So
yeah,
is
creating
that,
copies
yeah,
of you.
I mean, if they are successful in that, is it actually you living on, or is it a AI that thinks like you, can act like you, make all the same decisions you might have, and that living on?
I think
on?
It's much more probable that it's that.
Yeah.
And that the memories are just
that
memories.
That does nothing for me.
They're not personal. Me either.
Yeah.
I'm hoping the Buddhists are right. Yeah. Live a good life and come back as somebody better.
Yeah.
I am so hoping for the Buddhists.
Yeah.
Right, because you know, I don't want to go to heaven. Heaven seems really dull to me.
Yeah.
Right? A bunch of good people who don't say f-
yeah.
Right?
You never know. You're heaven, they might.
You might, yeah. You
might be filled with the F-bomb.
Yeah, so I don't know. And hell, right, it doesn't seem so good either.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of downloading something. Once you change it from human to machine, I kind of agree with you.
Yeah.
It's going to just be a copy.
It might be great for my kids. I'll have someone to talk to, but it doesn't help me at all.
You know, it's exciting about my kids. The lifespan that they may enjoy is pretty amazing, but we got to make the life itself amazing.
Yeah.
What if we do that? And there's so many things that we do wrong to our kids. I mean, middle school, has anybody ever had a great experience in middle school? Why do we tolerate this? Why do we tolerate this angst, this... Let's solve problems like that before we figure out how to download your consciousness.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's all economic. It's all economic. What are we going to pay for? Mm-hmm. And there are a bunch of rich people out there who are willing to pay for downloading their consciousness.
Yeah.
Because they like this life because they were really rich during it.
Yeah. So what are the things ahead that you're really excited about?
So I am really excited about, blockchaining and beginning to get rid of lawyers and politicians and... I'm really excited about getting rid of the whole advertising economy and beginning to directly connect buyers and sellers without a middleman in between. I'm really excited about data and just what you can do with it. I mean, we've never had this before. All of the data of the world at our fingertips. The entire world has been reduced to data.
Yeah.
It's more than just self-driving cars. It's really anything your imagination can allow. I mean, any intent you could possibly happen could be solved with computing.
Nice.
It's really exciting.
Awesome. All right. Thank you for talking to me.
All right. Now, you promised to chug that beer at the end of this. So
time to do it.
I'm expecting it.
Thanks, James.
Cheers, Larry. Bye, everyone.